The damage left by Hurricane Helene has put the spotlight on climate change.
Nobody can deny the impact of climate crisis anymore. At least I hope they don't. They must be brain dead if they do.
Huge explosions shook the sky near Beirut's main airport.
And the holy grail of Beatles memorabilia, a rare guitar owned by George Harrison, goes on the auction block.
A young George Harrison and Paul McCartney walked into Frank Hesse's music shop, and this is where this guitar was purchased.
Today is Friday, October 4th.
And this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Alexis Strope.
This is obviously a major disaster. It's beyond anything I've ever seen.
An emergency worker in North Carolina who, like most people in the western part of that state, isn't usually affected by hurricanes, and certainly not to the extent of Hurricane Helene. More now from Reuters correspondent Arthi Thayaparin on the extraordinary damage caused across four southeastern states in the U.S.
President Joe Biden traveled to North and South Carolina to see the devastation wrought by Hurricane Helene. From Marine One, Biden surveyed the damage below. Over North Carolina's Asheville, homes were smashed to bits, with some of the worst damage observed near rivers. Many of the people living in the area remained cut off from contact with the outside world, even as the U.S. president passed overhead.
The United States, the nation, has your back.
During an operational briefing, Biden said he had approved requests for federal funds to go to hard-hit states.
Today, I approved the request of Governor Cooper for the federal government to cover 100% of all the costs for debris removal, emergency protective measures for 6 months, all the costs.
Biden directed up to 1,000 active duty troops to help with response and recovery efforts. And almost 6,000 members of the National Guard have been deployed across six states affected by the storm. Drone video posted on social media by Florida Congresswoman Kat Kamak showed gutted homes and scattered debris. Hurricane Helene slammed into the state as a powerful Category 4 hurricane, before tearing a destructive path through southeastern states for several days.
Reuters correspondent Arthi Thayaparin.
The death toll from the storm has surpassed 200. That's an extraordinary number for hurricane deaths in the United States in modern times. The damage estimate is also extraordinary.
It's going to cost us billions of dollars. It's going to cost billions of dollars to deal with this storm and all the communities affected.
The latest estimate for recovery could be as high as $160 billion.
Scientists said this week that climate change is an unmistakable factor in the flooding caused by rainfall from Hurricane Helene. It was enormous rainfall totals over 3 days along more than 200 miles of the Appalachian Mountains from Georgia into Virginia that caused much of the damage. The water temperature in the Gulf of Mexico is being blamed for the rapid intensification of the storm. Warmer water in the Gulf fueled the wind speeds and the rainfall amounts of Helene. Scientists from the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory said their best estimate is that climate change may have caused as much as 50% more rainfall during Hurricane Helene in some parts of Georgia and the Carolinas.
In a moment like this, we put politics aside. At least we should put it all aside. We have here. There are no Democrats or Republicans, only Americans.
President Biden, during a news conference in North Carolina, as he outlined federal assistance to the states hit by the hurricane. But despite the declaration by the president, the storm pushed the issue of climate change front and center in the U.S. presidential election. It came up during the vice presidential debate earlier this week. And during a hurricane briefing, the president was asked if he thought climate change played a role in the extent of the damage.
And we've been through this before, but not like this. This is the worst ever.
Is this the consequence of climate change, Mr. President?
Absolutely, positively, unequivocally. Yes, 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 yes.
Scientists say climate change is making rainfall events worse across the world. In Tokyo, increases in rainfall have caused massive problems in the city. So now Tokyo has a huge underground cavern to help. As we hear in this report from Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen, it's just part of the city's plan to deal with the changing climate.
It looks like a secret underground cavern from the set of a movie, but it's actually a facility designed to keep Tokyo from flooding. It is one part of a growing system to ensure the expected increase in rainfall doesn't overcome the Japanese capital. Helping to oversee the expansion of this underground system is Shuno Tomo.
As the climate changes, these kinds of rains are expected to become more and more frequent. And to have even greater impact, we intend to strengthen the provisions of these facilities in order to ensure the safety and security of the people of Tokyo.
59 massive pillars that are 59 feet high and weigh 500 tons each make up what is known as the underground chamber here north of Tokyo. It has enough volume to fit almost 100 Olympic-sized swimming pools of water. When nearby rivers flood, the overflow courses through nearly 4 miles of massive underground tunnels before collecting here in what is officially known as the Metropolitan Outer Area Underground Discharge Channel. Facilities like this one help protect Tokyo from a changing climate. Being tracked by Tokyo University Professor of Environmental Science and Climate Risk, Seita Emori.
We are now in a long-term warming trend. So we anticipate that previously unseen record amounts of rain will fall as the temperature rises in the future.
The summer of 2024 was the hottest since records began in 1898, Japan's weather agency said in September. In Tokyo, sudden violent storms known as guerrilla downpours have become increasingly common. Tokyo's flood defenses went into action on August 30th as security cameras captured water pouring into the underground cathedral as a typhoon lashed southwest Japan nearly 400 miles away. The system kicked in 4 times in June, more than all of last year. During Typhoon Chanchan, it captured enough water to fill the Tokyo Dome baseball stadium almost 4 times before pumping it safely into the Edagawa River and out to sea. Work is also underway using a colossal tunneling machine to ground a path through the earth below Tokyo. The aim is to capture vast quantities of rain that might otherwise flood the streets above.
Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen.
Huge explosion shook the sky in the vicinity of Beirut's main airport in the early hours of Friday. Palestinians fear the crisis in Lebanon is diverting the world's attention from Gaza, where Israeli strikes killed dozens more people this week and diminishing already dim prospects for a truce as the war drags on almost a full year. Reuters correspondent Diane Toh takes a look at what's happening with these ceasefire talks.
On Thursday, local medics reported at least 99 Palestinian deaths in the past 24 hours. That includes an Israeli strike on a school compound sheltering displaced Palestinian families in central Gaza on Wednesday. Among the wounded were several children, including this baby. The Israeli military said the strike was aimed at a Hamas command center embedded in the compound that used to be a school. Both Israel and Hamas say the Lebanon conflict could help end the Gaza war. Sami Abu Zuri, a senior Hamas official, said it could lead to pressure on Israel to strike a ceasefire deal, which would see the release of Israeli hostages held in Gaza and Palestinians jailed by Israel. But others are doubtful. Nomi Bar Yaakov, an expert on Middle East diplomacy, told Reuters Israel is now focused on trying to dismantle Hezbollah's military arsenal. That means it's had to put the ceasefire in Gaza on the back burner. U.S. State Department spokesman Matthew Miller said on Wednesday that the United States is still focused on securing a ceasefire and blamed the Palestinian group for stalling the talks.
And Hamas has refused to engage.
In August, Hamas officials and Western diplomats said new Israeli demands to keep troops in Gaza were holding up negotiations. An official briefed on the Gaza ceasefire talks told Reuters nothing would happen until after the U.S. presidential election on November the 5th. That's because no one can, quote, effectively pressure Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, whom the official called the key impediment to a Gaza ceasefire deal. The official, who requested their name and nationality be withheld, also said Hezbollah wanted the ceasefire proposal floated during last week's UN General Assembly to be linked to a ceasefire deal in Gaza. But Israel rejected this, and the plan was dropped. Top Israeli officials publicly dismissed the idea of a quick ceasefire with Hezbollah. Meanwhile, at a funeral in Khan Yunis on Wednesday for some of the dozens of Gazans killed in an overnight strike, this woman called the death of a baby niece the biggest message to the world. A child sleeping in the arms of her mother, she said. What can I say? The whole world is asleep. Nobody cares about us or is even looking at our faces.
Reuters correspondent Diane Toe.
We're following these other stories from around the world. Hackers linked to Russian intelligence targeted dozens of former military and intelligence officials, journalists, and civil society groups with a sophisticated campaign designed to steal information. This is according to both U.S. authorities and Microsoft. They say emails were sent to victims that appeared to come from a trusted source. The U.S. Justice Department seized more than 100 website domains associated with the hacking network.
A Congolese governor says at least 78 people died when an overcrowded boat with 278 passengers capsized on Lake Kivu in eastern Congo. Jean-Jacques Peroussi, governor of the South Kivu province, says the number of dead could rise.
North Korea's Kim Jo-jong, the powerful sister of leader Kim Jong-un, criticized a military parade held in Seoul for its Armed Forces Day this week, calling it a clown show. In a statement carried by state media KCNA on Thursday, she downplayed South Korea's military capabilities.
In our continuing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election, the United States' policy on China has been mostly consistent from the administration of Donald Trump to the White House of Joe Biden, with both presidents viewing China as America's biggest competitor. But in the race for the next president, Kamala Harris and Trump have slightly different approaches toward the global superpower. VOA's Elizabeth Lee explains.
We strengthen, not abdicate, our global leadership.
If a tragedy happens and we don't win, there will be zero car jobs.
These two presidential candidates clash on several topics, but Democratic and Republican nominees Kamala Harris and Donald Trump agree on one issue, the threat of China. Robert O'Brien served as national security advisor during the Trump administration.
I think that the threat that we face from China is far more serious than we faced against the Soviet Union and the Cold War.
O'Brien says the U.S. should deal with China through a show of strength.
It's not just military strength. It's economic strength. It's diplomatic strength. It's soft power and cultural strength. That is what scares our adversaries.
On economics, both the Trump and Biden administrations have used tariffs to counter what they describe as China dumping cheap products abroad, making competition tough for U.S. businesses. Here's Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump at a campaign rally in Michigan.
China's going to take over all of your business because of the electric car and because they have the material we don't.
Trump is proposing tariffs of up to 60% on Chinese imports. Harris has also acknowledged U.S.-China competition.
I will make sure that we lead the world into the future on space and artificial intelligence, that America, not China, wins the competition.
Jeremy Suri is a history and public affairs professor at University of Texas at Austin.
She has supported some of the restrictions on trade that the Biden administration has supported as well, but she is certainly not a big tariff person.
Analysts say Trump is more transactional.
Probably my first call, I'm going to call up President Xi. I'm going to say you have to honor the deal you made. We made a deal, you'd buy $50 billion worth of American farm product, and I guarantee you he will buy it.
In the area of foreign policy, O'Brien says it's important to build alliances with like-minded countries.
There was a time when America could shoulder the burden alone. We can't do it anymore alone.
One expert says Trump has broken away from the traditional Republican foreign policy of establishing strong alliances. University of Houston senior research fellow Richard Murray.
Trump is just viscerally not much into alliances and much more into what's in it for us.
With election rhetoric ramping up over Chinese competition and security threats, some Americans fear the real losers may be Asian Americans and Chinese people living in the U.S., says Stephen Pei, who immigrated to the U.S. from Taiwan and works as a university professor.
They consider U.S. is facing a threat, the whole of society threat from China. Then it takes the whole of society threat response to deal with the threat from the faculty, students, researchers from China. I will be labeled because people cannot tell me, am I from Taiwan or from China or from Korean?
They're coming in from China, 3130.
With Trump's tough talk, some Asian Americans worry about increased anti-Chinese sentiment if he is elected. But Asian American Republicans say they hope Trump, being a businessman, can make a deal with China that will benefit everyone in America. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Washington.
Tunisia holds presidential elections Sunday that seems certain to give incumbent Kais Saied another term in office. His main rivals have been jailed, disqualified, or otherwise sidelined from the race. So here's the question. Is this the end of Tunisia's fragile democracy or just another chapter on a rocky road since its 2011 revolution? Lisa Bryant takes a look.
Tunisians voting for change 5 years ago faced plenty of choices. More than two dozen candidates ran in the 2019 presidential race. Political newcomer Kais Saied won the runoff with 73% of the vote. He promised to root out corruption and give power back to the people. Things are very different this time around. Tunisia's election commission, whose members were appointed by Saied, approved just three candidates for Sunday's presidential vote. One was considered close to the president. Another is sentenced to a dozen years in jail. The third is Kais Saied. Mikhail Ayari is senior Tunisia analyst for the International Crisis Group.
Is populist still popular? It's not true saying that everybody wants to get rid of him. But in middle classes and high classes of Nassau, he's not popular at all.
As president, Saied has rewritten the constitution, dissolved parliament, and ushered in new legislative bodies with limited powers. Voter participation was low on elections for each of Saied's changes. Just over 11% of Tunisians turned out for the legislative votes. These changes took place after Saied seized wide-reaching powers in 2021. Supporters praise Saied for cleaning up corruption and political gridlock. Some back his populist nationalist rhetoric and efforts to move beyond pro-Western alliances. Critics say the president is taking the country back to pre-revolution days of fear and authoritarian rule and failing to deliver on jobs and the economy. They point to dozens of political rivals, journalists, and rights activists who have been targeted or jailed in recent years. Kamel Jandoubi headed Tunisia's first independent electoral commission after the revolution.
Kais Saied's popularity has dropped considerably. That's why he's doing everything to lock up the political process. Because if he guarantees even the minimum of free expression, he very likely risks losing.
Most observers believe Saied will win a second term. His opponents promise to carry on their fight. Rita Dries is a senior member of the opposition El Nahda party.
People are going to contest his legitimacy. A peaceful political resistance will gain ground, and things won't last long for Kais Saied.
Voter turnout on Sunday may determine how big a mandate or resistance Saied will have moving forward. Lisa Bryant, VOA News.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Alexis Strope. While China and the West have been pushing for more electric vehicles on the road, gas-powered cars still dominate in Africa. Chinese automakers are tapping into the South African car market, the largest on the continent, with prices so attractive that dealers say existing brands risk being pushed to the curb. Kate Bartlett has the details from Johannesburg.
Ross Gray is looking for a gas-powered SUV that suits his young family and a job that involves a lot of work on building sites.
The reason I'm looking at something like this, the Chinese vehicles, is because, first of all, the price. It's a lot cheaper than your big brands.
The average Chinese SUV is about half the price of some of the more established brands from other countries. Ralph Heibner, Bike's regional sales manager, says the prices of these Chinese gas-powered cars draw customers to his dealership.
Not cheap in a sense that they're dumping product in South Africa, but affordable in terms of monthly payment, because for the South African consumer, it's not about the full price of the vehicle, but what am I paying on a monthly basis? That has to do with economics.
Chinese brands have become serious contenders in South Africa's auto industry, says Mari Magia, salesperson for another Chinese brand called Haval.
I do know a few that are closing down because of the Chinese dealerships that are opening up. We're booming, if I can say that.
In the past, many South African consumers were wary of the quality of Chinese-made vehicles. But buying habits may be changing. Gray says he's more comfortable with Chinese-made quality nowadays. There's also another, more local reason for considering a Chinese-made SUV. Gray's last car, a pricier Toyota Hilux, was stolen.
Being South Africa, the Chinese vehicles are not on the stolen list like the big brands are.
While only about one-third of South Africans own a vehicle, it is the largest car market on the continent. Ford, Toyota, Volkswagen, and Mercedes have manufacturing plants in the country producing vehicles for export or for the local market. The newest Chinese players in the car market are disrupting the industry here, says Michael Mabasa, head of South Africa's NAMSA, the Automotive Business Council.
In the last 5 years, we've seen an introduction of some very interesting brands that are coming into the country from China. And those brands have grown in the market and they've surpassed, in fact, many of our traditional brands that we have in the country.
Mabasa says there has been a 200% increase of Chinese gas-powered car brands coming into the country between 2019 and 2023. The growing popularity of Chinese brands doesn't mean there aren't bumps in the road. In 2018, Bike opened a manufacturing plant in the Eastern Cape, but production stalled, reportedly due to the pandemic, labor disputes, and a lack of brand awareness.
They're still in a setting up phase. They've obviously experienced some hiccups in getting that particular plant off the ground.
Bike's business detours aside, President Cyril Ramaphosa is looking down the road to a greener future, courting more investments from China and urging electric car maker BYD to set up shop in South Africa. With Sahir Kasim, Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg, South Africa.
And finally,
1959, a young George Harrison and Paul McCartney walked into Frank Hesse's music shop. And this is where this guitar was purchased.
That guitar, bought in 1959 by George Harrison, is going up for auction.
It's an incredible guitar. It's one of two most played guitars by George Harrison. George Harrison played this guitar more than 324 times here in Liverpool and on numerous shows in Hamburg in 1960 and again in 1961. In fact, right up to October 3rd, 1962, that was the last time that the Beatles performed in Hamburg at the, I think it was the Sky Club.
That's Martin Nolan, co-founder and executive director of Julian's Auctions.
George liked it because it looked futuristic, and that's what he was going for, that's what he was hoping for. He referred to this as a dog to play, so it wasn't easy, but he loved the sound that it created.
It's expected to exceed its estimate of $600,000 to $800,000 and make history on the auction stage for what it eventually fetches. No reason for that guitar to gently weep.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for joining us.
For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com.
In Washington, alongside Alexis Strope, I'm Scott Walterman.